Okay, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 161. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
It's been a while, long time no see, everybody. Apologize. It's we had a week where neither of us had really seen much. We had a week where I was sick. Things have just not worked out.
No, that's fine.
So it's been a while. We're behind on certain things that we should have reviewed weeks ago. I think we kind of have a decent amount of stuff to go through this week. We'll try to get through it all. I definitely will not be able to talk about everything I've seen in the last three or so weeks, but we'll, you know, kind of touch on the highlights.
Yeah.
The biggest of which is like the biggest movie of all time came out in our little hiatus here, and that is The Avengers. Is that right? The Avengers?
Avengers.
Infinity War.
Infinity War, yes.
Yeah. I personally did not go to see it, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. But, Chris, you did. And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it. Because, I guess before we go into this, like, you like the Marvel movies, but you're not like some of our friends and a lot of people out there that are, like, kind of obsessive about them.
Yeah, no, I think they're fun. They're fun, big budget blockbusters that are almost always of at least a good quality. Like, there's a few that are kind of stinkers, but generally they're good popcorn entertainment. And I mean, I have to give it to Disney and Marvel right off the bat for one thing, like. The fact that I think this is like the 19th movie in 10 years in this kind of series. Like, I mean, it's this joint universe between different movies that see characters cross over. It's a huge accomplishment. It's really kind of cool that they did it. But I don't know. Like, I saw some people being like, oh my God, this is our generation's Empire Strikes Back. Like that was something that I kept seeing. And I mean, I was two when Empire Strikes Back came out. So like, I didn't really get to experience that in theaters, but I think those people are crazy. Like this Infinity War is a good, fun film. It's fun. It is. And it's for what it is and what it has to do. It's pretty good. There's like 1,000 characters. It's crazy the amount of characters that are here. And the fact that they give them all something to do and kind of feel mostly important in the scenes that they're in is impressive. They do a very good job with drawing a blank on his damn name. The guy who plays Thanos.
I know who you're talking about.
Josh Brolin. He's they do a very good job with his character. Brolin's portrayal of Thanos is pretty good. He actually has a little bit more depth to him than some characters in these films. Which is something I think the Russos have done pretty well, because for as kind of bullshitty as Civil War is, like the main villain in that, the main thread is kind of like it is a little interesting that it's this dude that is just kind of a
dude.
Like he's pissed off that things have happened to him, and in this Thanos has a plan. Like he has seen his world. Titan decimated by famine and overpopulation. So he has gone on like a intergalactic crusade to eliminate suffering by killing half of population's planets. he's come to know about this, the Infinity Stones, which is a bunch of intergalactic magic stones or something. I don't know that there's a you know, there's a slew of them. They all go in this gauntlet thing. And if you have all of them, basically you have all the power in the world. You can do anything you want. You can control time. You can control reality. And yeah. His plan is to, like, you know, be, instead of being like this brutal warlord that goes through and takes out, he wants to do it mercifully and just instantly across the universe. So this is Infinity War is mostly that. It's him trying to assemble all the stones, and you learn that some of the stones are with the heroes that we already know, and some are not, but our heroes know about them, so they're going off to see them. They end up mixing like Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Spider-Man, and like they throw all these characters into crazy situations all over the place, and it's mostly fun to watch. It's a good fun, like, for being nearly, you know, I think it's like 2.5, almost maybe 2 hours and 45 minutes or so.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel long. Like it never, like there's enough breathing room in there that it feels like, you know, it progresses solidly. They explain where some characters are not, like, why they're not in the film, specifically Ant-Man and Hawkeye do not make appearances.
Well, Ant-Man's not in it at all, huh?
No, not at all. Like they mention why. It's situations having to do with something that happened in Civil War.
Okay.
But they kind of write them off to the side, and it makes sense because, like, if you have to, like, give, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes to each of these characters, and you have to add in two characters that are maybe on the lower tier end, like, you maybe don't need them. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. Like, I am not blown away by it. I don't think it's the best Marvel movie. I think it's an impressive feat for what they did, for how they handled the amount of characters, and for it actually being something that's watchable and fun at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, this idea that it is like the greatest movie ever is it's mind boggling to me, but hey, you know, if people like it that much, that's great. I think it's just kind of okay. One of the big reasons for that, though, is that this is very much a part one of two.
Yeah, I've heard that.
There is an event that happens that is very clearly going to be dialed back, turned back in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So the, I don't know, people coming out of this like crying and stuff, like, I was just,
it's like, so funny because, like, I don't know what the spoilers are, but I know exactly, like, I know what you're talking about. I know what everyone's talking about. People are going to die, and then they're going to somehow walk it back.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to.
Yeah. And I mean, and well, some of it, like, just for the fact that we follow film news, we follow casting news. We follow, like, when films are shooting, maybe some contract stuff here and there. The fact is that there are characters that die in this film that we know are coming back. They're under contract for sequels in individual character films. So it's like they're not dead. Like, there's no impact to their death.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is where it suffers the most. Like, I mean, if we didn't know that, right, if it would seem really ballsy that they killed off as many characters as they did. And there is, I mean, it's not a bloodbath, but it's a disappearing bath. If you've seen any of the memes that are online, like
I've just kind of figured out like what one of the memes are, because I forgot what podcast I was listening to when they were talking about it. But I was like, and I saw one today. I'm like, oh, okay,
right.
That's from Infinity War. Okay.
It's like that's what that is. And it's, I don't know. My son did not see it with me. He went and saw it himself last weekend, and he kind of came out feeling the same way. And we had not talked about it before. And he's 12. And he was like, yeah, but like this guy and this guy, like they're gonna, he's like, and you're gonna tell me they're not gonna bring this guy back? He just had a super huge movie that just came out recently. Like, it's like, all right, yep. I mean, maybe some of that's my fault, is that like I am maybe a little bit overly critical of things and don't just sip into it as easy, but and I'd maybe pass that on to him, but he was definitely like, he was like, it was fun, it was cool, like there's lots of cool fights, but he was not blown away by it either. So
well, I kind of, what you have to say about it is kind of what I expected you to say, so and it's kind of why I stayed away from it. But and maybe we could get into that for a minute if you want, but real quick, what's your verdict on Infinity War?
It's a 3 of 5.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to go see it, and well, part of it is, look, I'm the guy on this show who complains that there's too many superhero movies, and then I end up going to see a lot of them. So I'm part of the problem. Now, some of them I really like Logan, I think is a step above your standard, you know, comic book movie. I think Wonder Woman is a good example of a comic book movie. But for me, with a lot of the Marvel movies, I kind of am in the boat with you, but even more critical, where I'm just like, these movies all feel light. They feel like fluff. They feel very serialized and like they don't want to actually make things happen. Because, of course, they have to keep making more. You know what I mean? So it's like, right, there can never be a finality to anything.
It's a TV show. It's a TV show that we pay $15 to go see, like, five episodes of, four times a year.
And look, some of them, I watched Thor Ragnarok recently. I know you thought that one was kind of middling, and I did too for like about the first hour. It takes forever to get going. Once it did, by the end of it, I'm like, it's a good time. But here's the thing about that good time. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about that movie now.
Right.
And that is true for me of all these Marvel movies, is because they're so light and fluffy and almost like inconsequential, I can't remember the plot details a week later. And that's kind of a problem when I'm going to see a movie such as Infinity War, where, you know, 18 movies have set this thing up and I remember almost none of them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, some people go into these like knowing every little thing, and
I'm sure, they come out of it going like, that was fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And but I just, great. I can't, I mean, look, dude, I could watch, I could binge watch any show that's really good. And then I, you know what's going on, whatever, but for whatever reason with the Marvel movies, maybe because it's not like a week to week thing, or I'm not binge watching them. Like, I cannot remember. I couldn't tell you what the plot of any of them are for the most part. And so I'm just like, and at some point I realized, like, when I hear a review for a movie like Tully and I'm more excited to see that, maybe Infinity War is not for me. So that's why I didn't go. And it's nothing like, yeah, you know, if you like these movies, that's fine. But yeah, I'm telling you why, for me, I don't like them.
And I think that's perfectly fine. Like, I don't think that every film has to be for everybody. And Marvel and Disney are definitely trying to hit a very wide net. But
that's, I think, part of why I don't like them.
But they're never going to hit everybody. And, like, and I mean, for a lot of people, it is just being able to see heroes that they grew up like reading or watching in cartoons, like playing out in like awesome live action scenes. And they are like, they definitely is some awesome cinematography and fight choreography that goes on in these things. And there's some definite imagination, but yeah, they are very serialized. It does feel kind of like a giant TV show at this point that, you know, we only get episodes of every 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because like the right around the weekend it came out, I was like, "Oh, Civil War's on Netflix. I'll give that another go, like watch it again." So like, I'll be, you know, everything will be fresher in my mind.
That's not a good 15 movie. Minutes,
I got 15 minutes into it. I'm like, I'm so bored. I was so bored watching it. I turned it off. I couldn't. And I'm if I'm bored watching this, I'm not excited to see Infinity War. Why am I going to go? Like,
yeah, and that I think that's perfectly fair.
So, yeah, I will see Infinity War eventually because I am kind of interested in a way. It's like a season finale. So,
yeah, I heard a lot of people saying that too, but it's almost like I think you'd be better off waiting the year out, right? Like, and then seeing Infinity War and then whatever this Avengers movie next year is going to be that's going to tie it all together. I think you'd probably be better off just doing that. Like,
sit through a 5-hour movie.
Right.
We'll see. I'll see it at some point. I'm not going to see it in the theater. Like I said, at the end of the day, like I knew in my heart, like I'm not that interested, and so why am I gonna go sit for 3 hours? Where like there's a movie coming out tomorrow, I am fucking psyched to see. I don't feel that way about Infinity War, you know. So it is what it is on that. But I will I'll share my opinions on it eventually.
Yep.
And one last thing, just because a movie makes a lot of money does not mean it is the best. That is a little dig at one of our friends who was trying to make this ridiculous argument on Twitter and such. But
I think that makes it popular. That's it.
Yeah, and you know, as I pointed out to her, that you know, there's a lot of movies that are popular that are garbage, and she just kept doubling down further. Well, they haven't made this much money. And I'm just like, okay. Whatever, I don't care how much money. I don't care if it's making $1 trillion. I don't care.
And it doesn't matter how much a movie makes. If the film is not for you, it's never gonna click.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are people that just do not get Star Wars at all, and that is obviously one of the biggest movie franchises ever. But no matter what they do, no matter how much money those make, it's never going to flip for them because they're just not into those types of movies.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not talking shit about a movie I haven't seen. I'm just stating a long held belief that just because something is popular doesn't mean it's good. You have to give me something else to tell me why you think it's good. Anyways, moving along. I saw another film from 2018 that just came out on video. And that is, a new heist film called Den of Thieves, Chris. I think I mentioned I was going to see this the last time.
Yeah, I've seen it. 50 Cent, right?
Yes. All right. So, like, I was excited because I'm like, it looks like a cheesy, like, action type movie with Gerard Butler and 50 Cent. And it kind of is that. But it's actually, you know, part of the reason I thought that it would be cheesy and not very good is the casting there. And also, just like it didn't have a great tomato score and stuff. But it turns out this is kind of my jam. Like, and I kind of actually dug Den of Thieves. It is a straight up ripoff of Heat. Like, it very badly wants to be Heat with a little bit of like the town thrown in. You have your group of criminals planning a big robbery, and you have Gerard Butler as a cop trying to stop them, and he kind of has his own like strike team. They almost feel like you know, the guys from the Shield, like these guys are corrupt as fuck. They're like constantly drinking and smoking and like hanging out. They just seem real shady.
Okay.
They don't explicitly say that they're corrupt, but they just seem like they're willing to go outside the law. And it, you know, takes place in LA. So it's kind of like in that world. It's kind of my jam. It's kind of like, you know, like a bank robbery movie in LA. So like right off the bat, you kind of have me on your side. Although it is ripping off Heat, and I think it's nowhere near as good as Heat. And, you know, Gerard Butler is no Al Pacino at all. Like, he's, I think he's one of the worst things about this movie. Like, he's a total fucking asshole. Like, he's over the top. He's an asshole. Like, he just seems like a guy that's like a total dickhead. Like, he seems like the type of guy that would fuck your girlfriend and then laugh at you about it or whatever. You know what I mean? You're just like, this guy's scummy, you know? You know, so I'm not saying that there's anything perfect about this. There's problems I have with it. But the actual heist itself, which, you know, takes up like about the last 45 minutes of the movie, is thrilling, suspenseful. As you see, you're like holding your breath through this whole heist, and it's brilliant. I mean, maybe if you know certain things, like you know how banks work or you know how the Federal Reserve works, like you might be able to poke holes in it and say it's really stupid. I don't know any of this shit. I'm not a bank robber, and I don't work in a bank, so I don't know how anything is. But the movie seems like smart and logical, and I was kind of blown away by how good the heist was and how good, on like a filmmaking craft level, like how suspenseful it is. It's excellent. Like there's a part where like they're trying to drive away and they're stuck in like rush hour traffic, and they see, can see a cop who's like, you know, 10 cars back from them. You know, it's just like I'm telling you, edge your seat, you're holding your breath. And that like sustains that pretty well for like the last, you know, third of this movie. So even though it's like a little, I think it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, it's, you know, it's bloated. There's, like I said, there's stuff that, you know, I think there's rough edges. Like I think Gerard Butler is not great. There's scenes that don't even need to be there at all. Like there's a scene like 50 Cent, he's one of the robbers. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where like they show him like, there's like some guy trying to come to take his daughter to prom, and he takes the guy aside and brings him in his garage and like scares him. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the plot at all. Like, I'm just like, you could see like scenes. You're like, why did they not cut this? Cause like this movie's pretty long. So yeah, it's not perfect. There's things that could have been cut. There's things I don't love about it. It's an obvious ripoff of Heat, like in so many ways, like the dynamic between the cop and the criminal, even right down to how the ending plays out, is it's almost exactly what happens in Heat at the end of Heat. So if you remember that movie, you pretty much know the end of Den of Thieves. All that said, it's worth a rental because of the fucking heist. It's so cool. I don't want to spoil what it is, but it's really cool, like, and it really like throws you for a loop where you think one thing is happening, and then you're like, "Wait, what? Oh, okay." Yeah, it's a fun time. It's a fun rental. I'm gonna give it 3 stars.
Nice.
And you know, if you're into that genre, you could definitely do worse. And it's worth it if you like, if your favorite thing of those movies is like how they pull the shit off, and yeah, it's cool.
Nice. I think
Heat is better, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Heat is a very special classic film too. So, it's, yeah. But yeah, I love a good a heist setup movie type thing. So I may give this a shot.
I think you'll like it. And I guess we'll go to next. You saw a movie called Traffic, which I do not remember what the hell that is.
Traffic's out in theaters now, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's like I just saw it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, it is Paula Patton and Omar Epps. They are in a relationship, and they're heading up to the mountains in California, I think. I believe it's California, heading up the mountains anyway. And they're going to like some romantic getaway or something. And on the way there, they stop at a gas station where a couple bikers kind of get in Joe's face, John's face, John, who's Omar Epps' character. And Paul Patton's character, Bria, she runs into like a junkie in the bathroom. And then, you know, some time passes, they get to the house, and then this junkie shows up at the front door looking for the phone that she left in Bria's bag. And it turns out that these people are trafficking women.
Yeah.
This girl was trying to get out or something, but I don't know. It's so poorly put together. It's I think that the trailers make it look way better than it is, because
I remember seeing the trailer being like, I would go watch this, you know? Yeah.
And the way you kind of describe Den of Thieves is having some like extraneous scenes that don't make any sense. There's full, like, and this is an hour and a half movie. There are full scenes that are like, what are these characters? Why are they here? Why are you introducing them to me? Only for them to, like be ripped out of the story, like for no apparent reason, to not ever show up again, to not have any impact on the story. It's so weirdly put together. It takes a while to get to them at the house. And then, like, I thought maybe like that would be what the film was, right? Like a kind of home invasion type thing. People running through.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like 15 minutes of it. Like it takes like a half hour to get there. And then it's like maybe 15, 20 minutes of that. And then all of a sudden it wants to be this serious movie about showing what happens to women who are trafficked, like in human trafficking. Like, so it puts one of the characters in that situation and until she can escape. And it's really dumb. It's really poorly put together. Like, I think Omar Epps has like 5 scenes in the movie. Maybe 6. Like, everybody is only in it for like a couple scenes, except for Paula Patton, which is fine because she's beautiful throughout the whole thing. But it's such a weird film. It's so badly like edited and structured. William Finchner is Bria's boss at, like, she's a reporter or something, and he's in it for like 2 scenes. Like, one at the beginning, one at the end. Like, it's none of it makes any sense. And there's this very, let's see if I can find her name. Missy Pyle, who, I don't know if she's been in anything like that, jumps out at me. But she's like tall, very tough looking blonde. And the first time you see her, she looks evil. And guess what? She's in on it. Like, so it's like, it's like, oh, so like they can't even like make it seem like, oh, she's good. It just turns exactly the way you'd expect. Oh, she's an evil looking cop. Yep. She's with the bad guys. Yep. 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 All the way through. It's really bad. I'm going to go 2 of 5 here.
Okay.
Because it's not the worst thing I saw this week.
Oh, wow. Well, are we getting to the worst thing you saw too tonight as well?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll cover that.
All right. Well, I'll sprinkle in a little goodness in here, Chris.
Okay.
I saw Phantom Thread, which was nominated for Best Picture. It's the latest film from Paul Thomas Anderson. If you've seen the trailer, it looks like a really boring Oscar movie about a fashion designer who like sews things in people's clothes or whatever the fuck. Like, the trailer doesn't really do a good job explaining what the movie is. And it looks like one of those movies that's like trying to be an Oscar and win, you know, Best Costume Design, which I think it did win. So I went into this with a little bit of chip on my shoulder. It looked like a stuffy Oscar movie. Paul Thomas Anderson went from my favorite director in the late 90s and early 2000s to someone who has not made a movie I've liked since then. So when he came out, he had 3 in a row that I really loved: Hard Eight, Boogie Nights, Magnolia. And then, like, with each movie since then, I've liked him less. Like, he came out with Punch Drunk Love. He had There Will Be Blood, which I know a lot of people liked, but I did not. He had some stuff like I really hated, like The Master and Inherent Vice, which looked cool, but oh my god, I fucking hated it. So like, I'm going in this going, okay, this is Paul Thomas Anderson trying to win an Oscar again, and this is going to be really dry and boring. It's a little slow starting off, and it's 2 hours and 10 minutes. And it is a fashion designer in the 1950s in London. So it's like, it has all the like the dressing of something like that that would be boring and stuffy. And instead, it is actually a really kind of like playful and twisted and like demented romance. The closest thing I could compare it to like in his filmography is Punch Drunk Love, which have you ever seen that movie?
Parts of it, I believe.
It's like where Adam Sandler is a fucking nutcase, and then he meets someone else who's like kind of just as nuts as him, and yes. You know, they fall in love. That's kind of what this is. It's kind of the same thing in many ways. It's this fashion designer guy. He's a real fucking particular asshole, and he is eating lunch one day at a restaurant. He sees a waitress that catches his eye. He wants her to wear dresses, like model for him, and fashion shows and stuff. She's kind of like his inspiration, and he hires her. He makes her move in and live with him, and he's designing shit for her. And there's kind of a romance that buds between them, but it's like very weird and peculiar. And like he's a very strange guy. Like he's very kind of a dick at all times. But you know, like so, if he throws you any sort of faint praise, it feels really good. That's kind of like the abusive nature of the relationship, at least starting off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in his sister, who also lives with him and is very close with him. And it's kind of like this weird triangle going on. Like, even though, it's never explicitly stated that anything's going on between him and his sister. And I don't think even implied, but it's just like she's like this overbearing presence as well. I don't know if this sounds boring or not. Like, I'm telling you, it's more fun than it sounds. And then it goes places like I did not expect at all. And it gets even more twisted and more demented. And you find out, like, he's not the only one that's completely fucked up. This girl that he found is as well. And I don't want to say anything more to spoil it, but it's my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie since Magnolia. I was very surprised by this. It kind of, like, tickled me how fucking perverse and demented and kind of like sensual that the movie is, even though there's not any like explicit sex in it. There's this constant like kind of flirting and fucked up sexual politics and stuff going on. Yeah, this movie is a surprise. I really liked it, and I often use my girlfriend as a litmus test. Like, she could get bored by anything, and she was not bored by this. She was totally into the thing from start to finish, and when it was over, she was just like, that was pretty good. And she was like, she actually wanted The Shape of Water to win Best Picture, which it did. And after this ended, she's like, you know what, if I had seen this before the Oscars, she said, I would have been rooting for Phantom's Bed. So anyways, yeah, it's more fun than it looks. It's a twisted love tale. Cool. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll leave some of the surprises for others to see. But yeah, I'm going to give it 4 stars. It surprised me.
Nice.
Now, Chris, tell me about the worst movie you saw. Oh, I think I know what it is. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so they made a sequel to Deep Blue Sea.
Yes.
Which is
a movie you like.
Yeah, Deep Blue Sea. I think it's maybe the second best shark movie ever made. Deep Blue Sea was like 19 years ago. It was 1999, I think, when it came out. Starred Samuel L. Jackson and LL Cool J. It's a fun B movie shark film. I don't quite know why somebody thought 19 years later we're gonna make a sequel, or it's not even really a sequel, it's just a movie that is called Deep Blue Sea and has a 2 after it, because that none of the characters are returning. This is so low budget. It's like they had an empty warehouse and built some really bad sets around it. and spent all their money on one scene with the CGI shark, because every other scene with sharks is terrible. It's still about genetically modifying sharks. This guy Carl Durant. He's played by Michael Beach. These are names nobody knows. He's like the mad scientist guy, right? He's the one that's doing all the experiments on these things, and he's trying to make like a wonder drug. Like, if you ever saw Limitless, So like, he's trying to make a drug like that, that unlocks the mind, like gives you full potential. And for whatever reason, he thinks, you know, experimenting on sharks is the way to go about doing that. But, all he's done is created, more smart sharks. And also one of the sharks is knocked up and she has baby sharks. And then those baby sharks are swimming around after the sharks attack and start making everything sink in this underwater lab. It's so bad. Like, there's a scene where a guy gets ripped in half and it's like, what the fuck? Like, he gets eaten by these like little baby sharks. They just like rip him in half, but they pull him up and it's like, it's like 1999 video game CGI.
It looks like fucking Blade, where fucking Steven Dorff gets ripped in half.
Yeah, something like yeah. Probably worse. Like, I haven't seen that recently, but yes, it's like that quality of it's. And I'm sorry, there are people doing YouTube videos now that do better CGI than the stuff that's in this film.
Okay.
And do better stuff than films like in Blade and like some of that stuff back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. I don't understand why this happened, why somebody gave money to greenlight this. Like, I love a good shark movie. This is not a good shark movie. Fortunately, it doesn't seem like most people even know it exists. So that's good. Like, it won't be like, oh, I really like Deep Blue Sea, I should go out, I should see this one. One, if you do really like Deep Blue Sea, don't let that thought enter your head, because this is a waste of like whatever you're going to pay to watch it. So yeah, it's a 1-star film, which is the second 1-star movie of this year that I've given. So
It's going to make you a little sad. I have not seen Deep Blue Sea, just parts of it. So maybe I'll fix that, but I probably won't be seeing Deep Blue Sea 2.
No, don't. But I do believe Deep Blue Sea is on Netflix. So
okay,
if you're looking for like a fun, goofy kind of shark movie with an awesome scene where Samuel Jackson is giving a motivational speech on how they're going to survive, give Deep Blue Sea a shot.
I think I've seen that scene. I like I said, I've seen parts of it, but maybe I'll give it a shot one day and sit down and watch the whole
thing. Yeah.
I've seen a whole bunch of stuff in the last 3 weeks or so, but I'll touch on one more thing before we wrap up. I watched season one of The Handmaid's Tale, which is a Hulu series, like an hour-long drama based on a book by Margaret Atwood, I want to say.
Yep.
Imagine a future, Chris, where the Republicans have taken over and they basically make women slaves. That's kind of the premise.
About 3 years from now.
Yeah, that is the remarkable thing about this show. The timing, I mean, I know the book was written in like the 80s or some shit, which was also a very, you know, it was a right-wing administration in the 80s. Nowhere near like what it's like today, but like this show coming out today, it feels about one step removed from the reality we're actually living in. I think that's what made it's a great show. It's a great show released in any context. You know, if we could be in happy times, whenever, it would have been a good show. But watching it in the context, like the world that we're living in right now. Absolutely terrifying, dude. Because you're just like, they're like, you can just see the little step that we have to make to reach the world that the people are living in this. So like, and the show does a really great job of flashing back to how we got to this world, You know, so it'll flash back a couple, like, or a year or so before when things started to change a lot, right?
Okay.
So, for instance, there's a scene where a bunch of people are protesting what's going on. You know, this is in a flashback. And you can see once the police start to cross that line where they just start shooting the people in the crowd. And it's like, you know what? How far removed is that from, like, the shit you see all the fucking, like, the police brutality you see all the time today, the way people who are peacefully protesting get attacked.
Yep.
It's not, like, it's not a huge mental leap. And then, so then you see how you get to the society where women are slaves. It's fucking insane. So the kind of idea, like the basic idea, is that it becomes very hard for women to reproduce, and so the women who still can reproduce are basically put into slavery, and they're made handmaids for like rich couples, and the husband gets to have sex with them so that they can have a baby. So like. Husband is like raping these women, and it's just insane. Like, it's absolutely riveting and compelling from start to finish. Like, I was just like, holy shit. Like, they go into detail on everything. They show there's lots of like crazy sex in the show. I remember tweeting at one point, like, this show should probably not be such a turn on. Like, it's my bad that I'm enjoying this as
right.
Much, man.
It's not good subject matter.
Well, there is also, like, you know, there are sex scenes between people who want to have sex.
Okay.
But there's just all the repressed sexuality in it is, like, crazy. Because, like, the husbands are not supposed to be enjoying what they're doing with these women. You know, they literally lay there on the bed, the women who are slaves, with their head in between, like, basically in the crotch of the guy's wife. Like, so the wife sits there in the bed. The handmaid lays there with her head in the wife's crotch, and the husband has sex with the handmaid, but just stares at his wife and does not ever look at the woman he's actually having sex with. Like, they got details like this down. I'm just like, but then there'll be a part where, like, he puts his hand on her leg, or like he glances down at the girl that he's actually having sex with, and then they're. You know, a lot of these husbands start having secret relationships with the girls that they're keeping in their houses and shit. The show really explores the idea of like, what if this, like this what if scenario, it explores right. The idea of how do we reach this moment and what are all the ramifications of if this actually happened, like such as the guys might be having relationships with them on the side or someone like also like, and you know, it's this whole right wing society where everything is like banned and outlawed, but there's still secret sex clubs that all these rich guys are going to have sex with slave prostitutes as well. Like it's dark and it's absolutely twisted and riveting and compelling and everything I've said, like it's a phenomenal show. Like I fucking was obsessed with it, burned through it within a couple days. I guess the only thing I would say bad about it, especially like knowing that it was adapted from a book, is I thought that the ending of season one would be stronger because like that kind of ends the book, and then season two, which is going on Hulu right now, is, you know, it's kind of like what Game of Thrones has done, where it's gone beyond what the books have done.
Okay, so it's guessing at like what would happen next.
Yeah, and it's like. To a book, like a sequel that she's never going to write or whatever, you know, it was like, right. I think, as far as I know, it was a one and done book. So I expected the ending to season one to be really strong, and it just kind of sets up more for season two. And so I was like, I don't know whether they altered the ending to make that so, or if that's just how the book ends. And it was just, I don't know. I was kind of underwhelmed by how it ends. But that said, the whole ride, the whole way along the way, and just learning more and more about this world, I was just instantly gripped by it. Elizabeth Moss, who played Peggy on Mad Men, she's fucking fantastic in this as the lead. What's her name as fucking... God, I can't think of her name right now. Anne Dowd, is that her name? Yeah, Ann Dowd plays like this fucking evil, evil commander lady who like whips all the girls into shape. Yeah, I really, really loved it. Like, there's so many eerie scenes. Like, I remember, like, just in the pilot alone, there was like these lines I loved where it was like, there's a one part where they're like slut shaming this girl whose eye that they pulled out because she was bad, and everyone's pointing at her, calling her a slut and shit. And Aunt Lydia, this evil commander lady, is like sitting there telling them, you know, this might seem unusual to you guys, but that's just because it's new. This will seem normal to you. And I'm just like thinking about the fucking Trump administration. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, couldn't recommend it enough. There's ways to watch it. You know, I rented it on discs through Netflix. It is a Hulu original show, though. So if you have Hulu, you can watch it. Well worth watching. 5 stars.
Nice. I will get to it. My wife recently, we just got Hulu, and she burned through it in like 2 days.
Yeah, you should have watched it with her. It's fantastic, dude.
Yeah, so I will give it a go.
Yeah, I guarantee you, by the end of the first episode, you're gonna be like, I want to see where this is going. I think he did have one more for us this week.
Do
Oh,
so
yeah, Nick
you
Cage.
remember Crank 2 and the, like by a directing duo Neville Dean and Taylor. Brian Taylor, the Taylor in that duo, he has a new film out called Mom and Dad, which stars Nick Cage and Selma Blair. It is a kind of like sci-fi horror thriller type film where some sort of signal comes through and parents start to try and kill their kids. And this is a
I
film
like
that
this.
just lets Nick Cage be fucking crazy Nick Cage through most of this film. And it kind of works. Like him and Selma Blair is also kind of batshitty in it.
her.
And then it's pretty quick. I think it's like it's less than an hour and a half. And then once the parents of the parents show up, it really just ramps up even more. Lance Henriksen plays Nick Cage's dad. And he is in full on crazy mode. It gets insane. It is not a great movie, but it is a ton of fun. It's a really quick, like 80 minutes, 85 minute watch. I'm gonna go 3 of 5 on it, but it is definitely something fun. Like if you're looking for something fun and goofy, and you like Nick Cage being like crazy Nick Cage, this will satisfy your needs.
Okay, there's a couple things you said there that I really liked. It is number one on my queue now. I like that premise. I like really like the idea of the premise. And as soon as you said it's one of the people that did Crank, I'm like, oh, okay. And just increasing insanity, I like that as well.
Yeah,
So.
it just keeps ramping up. Like it's never super gory or anything, but it there's this feeling of craziness that is just rolling, and it succeeds at doing that. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I love that premise. That's such a fun idea. I can't wait to see it. So for next week, I will have Mom and Dad for one. I will have my first anime film that I've ever seen. It's called
Really?
Your Name.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you seen that? Your Name, it's called.
No.
It came out, I think it came out last year in America. It came out a couple years ago in Japan. It was a huge hit. It came out here to rave reviews as well. So I will have that for next week. And I will have the movie I'm really excited about, which I mentioned earlier in the show. That is a new horror thriller called Revenge, much in the same vein as I Spit on Your Grave or something like that. So looks really cool. I'm really hyped and excited to see that. So that's what I'll have for next week, Chris.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and see Revenge as well. It comes out on VOD tomorrow, so
Yeah.
I was trying to see it in theaters, but it does not look like it's playing anywhere in the area in theaters. So,
yeah, I will. I thought I signed up for Shudder. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit next week because it's a Shudder film. Like they made it, but apparently they're doing the Amazon model of try to release it elsewhere first, and then it comes to their streaming service. I think it's a weird move for Shudder because if I were Shudder, I'd be trying to like make my streaming service a destination that is like,
well, right? Hey,
you want to see stuff here?
Yeah, like to me, that's what Netflix does well, right? Like, hey, we're gonna release a Netflix movie or a Netflix series, and you can only get it here.
Amazon could get away with going a more traditional route because I think, you know, people get Amazon Prime for other reasons.
Yeah.
First, you know, so I don't know. It kind of sucks, but Shudder is kind of cool. Like I said, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit next week, but yeah, I'm very excited to see Revenge, however I get to see it, as well as Your Name and Mom and Dad. So yeah, come back. We will be back next week.
All right.
And one other, some future content stuff. We will be doing in about a month or so our, you know, year so far episode where we kind of like do our top five of the year so far. I like to do that like little midpoint episode to see like checking in where we're at. Coming this fall, we're going to do another series review. If you're aware of what's coming out in terms of horror movies, it's a super easy guess, especially if you know me. Leave it at that and come back next time.
Movie dudes.